All right, welcome to Useful Idiots.
I'm Katie Helper.
And you're Matt Taibbi.
I am.
It's true, yeah. How's it going, Matt?
It's going well. It's going well. We have a really important show, underscoring the word important, today. A friend of show, Aaron Mate, because we're doing this show probably because we're going to be the only people on one side of the political spectrum who are going to discuss in depth a recent development in a case that we care about a little bit. And we're going to talk about something else that's of massive importance.
Probably,
I would say global importance.
Colossal, yeah.
Right. So before we get to the food groups, I think we have to get to that. Boy, it's really hard to not hit a pun on the way to this story, isn't it? Right?
You know,
but we don't want to talk about being blown away by this story, right?
Blown away. We're going to break it here.
Yeah, you can't break the story. Yeah.
We're going to deal you guys some news.
Right, yeah.
Remember who dealt the news to you?
Right, exactly. Well, okay, let's just
let her rip. Should we let her rip?
Let it rip, yeah.
All right. Joe Biden or the new Mr. Trump? Camilla hasn't stopped talking about hearing the president break wind during chat at COP26 Climate Summit in Glasgow. President Joe Biden met Duchess of Cornwall during reception on Monday. They made polite small talk, and Camille was shocked to hear Biden break wind. Reception was hours after Biden appeared to doze off at COP26 opening. So I think maybe that's the summary. Should we just read the article? It's not that long, and it has, or we should at least read parts of it, right?
Because I just want to point out that news.com Australia had the one that you showed the first time.
Yeah.
The other article.
Wilson sent that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at it, the original headline.
Let's see, what does it say? Camilla Parker Bowles can't stop talking about Joe Biden's long fart.
But look at it. What the headline was originally in the tab.
Oh, let's see. What was it? Let's see.
So Camilla blown away by Biden's long fart.
That's so much better. Why'd they change it?
They wimped out. They didn't want.
They wimped out.
Yeah.
They didn't have the fart guts.
Yeah. Yeah. Do farts have guts?
No.
They come from guts.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah. Guts is such a disgusting word when you think about it.
I think it's a good word.
I hate it. The gut or guts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of onomatopoeia because it sounds all like acidic and gross.
I like the way like sort of Yorkie English people say the guts.
Oh, the guts. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got
and the
guts.
Scottish too, right?
Right. Exactly.
Similar accent, yeah.
So,
and let's just see his face. It looks like it looks like he's mid fart or smelling someone else's fart or saying, no, it wasn't me. Could be any of those. And they have a great image of Camilla with a mask on, but the way that, you know, with the face like a normal COVID, well, actually, it's a pretty striped mask, but it's a COVID mask. And She's holding it up.
The Nancy Pelosi thing going. It's a mask that matches her outfit.
It matches the outfit, yeah. But she's holding it up. It kind of, and it definitely gives the vibe of like, oh my God, what am I smelling?
I mean, it's totally irresponsible news on like 90 different levels. I mean, we should read the story.
Yeah, okay, let's read it. Yeah.
Do you want to read?
Daily Mail, the Daily Mail one?
Yeah.
Okay.
They go straight
it's really
into
good.
The pun.
They go straight in. Yeah, they go right into the headwinds, whatever. Yeah. He is supposed to be committed to reducing emissions, but when President Joe Biden produced a little natural gas of his own at the COP26 summit, it was audible enough to make the Duchess of Cornwall blush. An informed source has told the Mail on Sunday that Camilla was taken aback to hear Biden break wind as they made polite small talk at the global climate change gathering in Glasgow last week. Guess that changed their climate globally. It was long and loud and impossible to ignore, the source said. Camilla hasn't stopped talking about it. The president met the Duchess during a reception on Monday at Kelvin Grove Art Gallery, attended by Prince Charles, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, and Boris Johnson. Just hours earlier, the 78-year-old, nicknamed Sleepy Joe by Donald Trump, had appeared to doze off during the opening addresses, prompting more questions from his political rivals over his fitness for office.
And that's legitimate. Like if you're a president and you fall asleep during an event,
I mean, to be fair, he's just governing as he campaigned.
I would fall asleep during an event, that event.
Probably.
But I'm not also,
in office, this is not the first time that Biden has faced claims that he broke wind. May 2020, Republicans, including Donald Trump Jr., posted a video clip of Biden containing a suspicious noise while live streaming an exchange with Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf.
Ooh, we got to find that. Hang on a second.
Yeah, seriously. However, a separate video which circulated last month and was briefly trending on Twitter under Fartgate, hashtag Fartgate, was found to have been doctored to include fake flatulence. Trump Sr. is considering running in the 2024 presidential race after a year in the White House. Biden's approval ratings are at rock bottom, with polls putting his predecessor 2 percentage points ahead. This summer, Johnson praised Biden as a, quote, big breath of fresh air on climate change compared to his predecessor. Appropriately, Biden has urged world leaders to cut methane gas emissions by 30% by the end of the decade.
They had to put methane in the
story. Cows and other livestock contribute substantially to global methane levels. The White House declined to comment last night. What did I say?
No, I'm just saying, and presidents also could contribute to it.
Oh, yeah, and presidents, yeah. Well, I guess he needed to lower the emission to compensate for his...
Well, the White House commit to farting less.
Yeah, seriously. That is, yeah. That's a good question. We asked it here, Joe.
Will Yamiche Alcindor have the guts to ask that question?
Yeah, we'll see. Anyone, if you guys do, you cite useful idiots.
So as long as we're talking
some people have asked, Yamiche should say, what do you say to the people who say that you need to commit to emitting less wind?
Right. What would your response be to such a hypothetical person? Yeah. I never knew about this Tom Wolf Fartgate situation.
There was a pretty loud, this is from BuzzFeed, there was a pretty loud fart noise during a Joe Biden live stream, and this is from May 27, 2020. I didn't know. Politicians, they say, can be full of hot air, but I'm bummed. Nice subtitle, subheadline. Okay, let's watch. Well, first of all, it looks like he just farted, and he's sitting. The fart just elevated him. He's a lot taller than Governor Tom Wolf.
So I got it the other way. I got it that the blast was so explosive that it pushed
Tom Wolf down. Yeah, virtually.
And got rid of all of his hair.
All of his hair, yeah. I mean, they're in different spaces.
Right.
So I figured, but it could have been that continuum. Strong. Yeah, space-time continuum. Some farts get...
There's actually a function on Zoom.
On Zoom, yeah.
That allows your farts to travel. Sorry, go ahead.
You don't have to cut those teachers and firefighters, police officers, and cut critical healthcare programs, or stop work on roads and bridges. So
did you hear that?
Of lack of state and local fiscal relief look like in Pennsylvania.
Let's do it again. Let's hear it again.
That's pretty loud.
Or stop work on roads and bridges. So what does the human cost?
Is that real? He definitely farted if that's real. To be fair, I did interview Adolph Reed and it sounded a lot because the way he was moving his chair, it sounded a lot like farting.
Yeah, that's not a moving around in your chair noise.
No, it's not.
I like the face though. Like if we could watch it, this is a person who has repeatedly farted in public and has learned how to just power through
and cut critical healthcare programs or stop work on roads and bridges. So, what does the human cost?
It's just seamless. I think he wasn't aware he did it actually.
Critical roads and bridges.
What do you think of my theory that he didn't realize he had done it? You think that's possible?
It's possible. I mean, and this brings the fore to the whole the Biden sharding in the Vatican thing.
Oh yeah.
Right. And right. That wasn't even a shard. That was like a whole, I mean, I guess we got to point out that in reality, you can't do a story like this, you know, you especially can't do it if you're going to have somebody else quoted by name. So, like, you know, obviously in court, this would be hearsay.
Right.
You can't say an informed, unnamed source says that Camilla Parker Bowles said that Biden farted. Now, it gets a little weird if she doesn't come out and deny the story. Right. But that's like Lyndon Johnson thinking, you know, that whole thing about there's a famous political story where Johnson instructed one of his aides in an early race. This is like before the presidency. that to accuse an opponent of having sex with his pigs on his farm. Right. And the guy said, you know, Jesus, Lyndon, we can't accuse the guy of being a pig fucker. And he said, right, but let the son of a bitch deny it.
Right.
Right. So putting it out there that Camilla Parker Bowles is the source of this story puts the onus on her, you know, to come out and say, that's not true. I didn't hear any fart.
Right.
But now, what now if she doesn't do that?
Right. She hasn't, I don't think.
She hasn't. She's stayed silent, but deadly.
Silent but deadly, yeah.
Right? It's obviously completely silly and irresponsible and
important.
Well, no,
we advertised at the beginning of the show.
That's where I was going with this. There's, yeah, on a scale of 0 to 10, importance-wise, you would normally rate this somewhere close to 0, right? But it's
with 0 being the most important, right?
No. In reality, it's like not that big of a deal. But it's this whole thing with Biden falling asleep and having some other issues.
Yeah. Let's look at the falling asleep. So this is him sitting arms crossed. I get that. I feel like if you're tired, sometimes you try to cross your arms to like brace yourself back to consciousness.
Right. I mean, you add this to the whole, you know, I'm so glad to be back in New Hampshire or whatever it was when he was in Vermont. Like, how many times did he forget what state he was in during the campaign, and, you know, taking him off the campaign trail entirely. You know, these stories are starting to pile up.
Yeah. And then when we diagnosed him as seeing a cactus.
Oh, that's
speaking
right.
To a cactus. Yeah.
Speaking to a cactus.
Yeah.
Look at that guy up there. Yeah. So that happened. Do you have any other thoughts about?
No, I just think we needed to, you know, not a lot of people have the guts to go there, and we do. So right. You're welcome, world.
Right. You're right. You're welcome, world.
Yeah.
All right. So the four food groups this week, I guess we should start with Democrats suck. I'm going to be petty about this. I just want to, dive into an issue that we're going to be talking about with our guests. There was a moment after the indictment of Igor Danchenko, who was sort of the primary source for Christopher Steele's dossier. So after he was indicted, Adam Schiff, of all people, one of our favorite politicians here, went on The View and had the following exchange, if we could see that.
So I want to ask you about something that's in the news a lot right now. You've been really prolific over the past few years being the head of the Intel Committee, and you defended, promoted, you even read into the congressional record the Steele dossier. And we know last week the main source of the dossier was indicted by the FBI for lying about most of the key claims in that dossier. Do you have any reflections on your role in promoting this to the American people?
Of course.
Well, first of all, whoever lied to the FBI or lied to Christopher Steele should be prosecuted, and they are. And unlike in the Trump administration, if they're convicted, they should go to jail, not be pardoned. Mm-hmm. So Donald Trump pardoned Roger Stone for lying. He pardoned Michael Flynn for lying. If people lied to the FBI, they should go to jail. But at the beginning of the Russian investigation, I said that any allegations should be investigated. We couldn't have known, for example, people were lying to Christopher Steele. So it was proper to investigate them. And let's not forget what we learned in that investigation. We learned that the Trump campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was giving internal polling data, campaign polling data, to Russian intelligence while Russian intelligence was helping the Trump campaign.
And to be clear, he was fired halfway through the campaign.
He goes on, but as the tweeter there, the reporter Ken Vogel, who's a good reporter, by the way, points out, Schiff immediately deflected there to talk about Konstantin Kalimnik, who wasn't even in the Steele dossier. So
yeah, he shifted.
Right, exactly. So just to remind people how egregious this whole thing was, and he's saying, oh, if somebody lied to Christopher Steele, that person should go to jail, that person shouldn't be pardoned. Let's just go back in time to March of 2017 when everyone was losing their minds over the Russia story. And Adam Schiff, this was actually it was a key kind of like, what the fuck moment when I thought there was something that was either, I thought this either has to be true or this is like the craziest, you know, sort of oppo conspiracy that I've ever seen. So here's Adam Schiff reading, giving a statement about the whole Russia thing, and he does sort of an extraordinary thing with the contents of the Steele dossier in this speech.
Here are some of the matters drawn from public sources alone, since that is all we can discuss in this setting, that concern us and we believe should concern all Americans.
Stop just for a second. Drawn from public sources alone. What does that mean? He goes on to cite the most private of private sources. But anyway, go ahead.
In early July, Carter Page, someone candidate Trump identified as one of his national security advisors, travels to Moscow on a trip approved by the Trump campaign. While in Moscow, he gives a speech critical of the United States and other Western countries for what he believes is a hypocritical focus on democratization and efforts to fight corruption. According to Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer who is reportedly held in high regard by U.S. intelligence, Russian sources tell him that Page has also had a secret meeting with Igor Sechin, CEO of the Russian gas giant Rosneft. Sechin is reported to be a former KGB agent and close friend of Putin's. According to Steele's Russian sources, Page is offered brokerage fees by Sechin on a deal involving a 19% share of the company. According to Reuters, the sale of a 19.5% share of Rosneft later takes place with unknown purchasers and unknown brokerage fees.
So Schiff, this is a U.S. congressperson, and just to back up, once upon a time in fact-checking and journalism, if a member of Congress read a prepared statement, we used to consider that checked. In other words, like you didn't have to, if somebody read a prepared statement on the floor of Congress, that would be good enough for us to pass a fact into print, because we were so sure that they would never do something that was unconfirmed or wasn't at least sourced. So he goes, in this moment, he says that the Steele dossier identifies Carter Page as being the potential recipient of a 19% share of brokerage fees and a 19% stake in Rosneft, the share of the sale of that. That's a $65 billion capitalization in that company. And then he says it's a 19% stake later takes place, which implies that Steele correctly identified in advance without public knowledge the size of the stake in Rosneft that was going to be sold. So he's saying that an advisor to Trump has been offered this massive bribe in order to ease sanctions on Russia. And he burnishes the credentials of the Steele dossier by saying, look, he guessed it right at that time. I called the Schiff's office after that and asked him if he knew, if his office was aware that Steele had testified in a British court case that his dossier was raw and needed to be further verified. I just want to read their answer to me at the time.
Wow. This is some original.
So this is what they said to me back then. This was right after that. The dossier compiled by former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele, and which was leaked publicly several months ago, contains information that may be pertinent to our investigation. This is true regardless of whether it was ever intended for public dissemination. Accordingly, the committee hopes to speak with Mr. Steele in order to help substantiate or refute each of the allegations contained in the dossier. So in other words, they hadn't even called him yet. They hadn't checked any of it yet. No reporter pointed this out at the time. The thing about Steele correctly guessing the 19% size of that stake, that was in the Russian press a year before this. So it was publicly reported. And so he read this whole thing into the record, and it spawned like thousands of news stories after this. And now he's sort of backpedaling away from the whole thing and suggesting that, how could we have ever known? Well, among other things, the FBI had already conducted an investigation into these sources and concluded that a lot of them were not reliable by the time he gave that speech. This was already known to the FBI. Just this whole thing, including some of the interviews that came out in this indictment that we're going to talk about with Aaron. But Adam Schiff, I don't know how many times this is an example of a politician who's lied so many times and continues to be given huge platforms by news agencies who never call him on it. Like, it's, you know, he's the one who said we have more than circumstantial evidence of collusion and, you know, nothing. So it's interesting that The View even hit him with that question. I think it indicates that there's kind of a shift in the weather a little bit. And, we saw the Washington Post last week started to talk about how there was new uncertainty about some of their reporting on this stuff.
They should take their own conspiracy theory test.
Right. Exactly. Anyway, we'll talk about this stuff with Aaron, but that whole thing, the shift thing, it's, you know, they can't let it go. You know, they just gotta keep digging on this thing.
Yeah. Right.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
So what happened for Republican Suck?
So let's just go to a clip from Media Matters. It kind of says it all. But this is Eric Bolling making some really good points about propaganda.
The left still wants to grab the remaining control over you and me. A last-ditch effort. Their desire to control, exert control over everything from cradle to the grave, proven day in and day out. Just this week, Big Bird from Sesame Street indoctrinating our five-year-olds.
And I've scheduled an appointment for my grandson. We're leaving in a few minutes. Yeah. Now, I just need to get one last thing before we go to your appointment, Big Bird.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
All right.
And look what I have here is what we needed for your vaccine.
Teddy bear.
Shot.
Five-year-old. Get vaccinated.
Yes, it's time to go, Big Bird.
All right. Anyway, then the giant pigeon took to Twitter to announce to everyone
giant
how it
pigeon.
Felt about getting the shot. Not giant. The first time these little felt communists have tried to infect the minds of our youngest and most vulnerable children.
Felt
communists. Ago, way back in 2011, I called out Kermit, that cute little green monster commie. But I remember when I was a little kid, we were poor, but we were dead broke.
So this
in fact,
is a flashback.
My parents would see someone wealthy driving by and be like, see that guy? He started a business. He worked hard. You can be like that someday. Not pointing the finger at Tex rich man and saying he's a bad guy. Well, here's what happened. The Muppets were blaming an oil baron for closing down the studio. That's cute, you little oppressive Muppets. They didn't even try to hide their disdain for success by naming the guy Tex Richmond. Yeah, but I took them to task.
It's bad. I just want to say, listen, Froggy, what's his name?
Kermit.
Miss Piggy, if you want to debate this anytime.
What's his name? What are you talking about?
So let's bring it. Let's have maybe, I don't know, Donald Trump moderate a debate. What do you say, Kermit?
All right, well, I called them out almost 10 years later. They never took me up on that offer. Apparently, though, me calling them out didn't sit well with one portly pink dummy who took to the media to trash me for exposing her leftist tyranny.
It's almost as laughable as accusing Fox News as, being news.
Hi, yeah.
Boy, that's going to be all over the internet.
Yeah. Guess what? The invite's still open, Miss Piggy. If you or your emasculated frog boyfriend, Kermit, ever wanted to join this desk, it's free. So, yeah, at first I thought they were mere ideologues. And now I think they're just stuck
on
stupid.
You just kill Kermit?
I mean, they don't get it when half the country disagrees with them. It's not their job to make us acquiesce.
Yeah.
They need to listen to
it. He tipped over Kermit. And then we see Kermit lying on his side.
Lifeless.
On on his desk. Yeah. I mean, so did you see the big bird thing?
No.
The controversy. Okay. So Big Bird tweeted, I got the COVID-19 vaccine today. My wing is feeling a little sore, but it'll give my body an extra protective boost that keeps me and others healthy. So here, let me just show you. People got a little triggered here. Matt, I'm putting in the chat.
An unlikely figure has emerged at the center of the debate over vaccinating children against COVID-19. Sesame Street's Big Bird. Yes, the giant yellow bird who's supposed to be 6 years old faced a social media backlash from some conservatives after Big Bird tweeted about getting vaccinated. In the post, Big Bird wrote, "My wing is feeling a little sore, but it'll give my body an extra protective boost that keeps me and others healthy." Among those taking issue with that message was Republican Senator Ted Cruz. He called it government propaganda for your five-year-old. A few hours after that, the tweet did receive a round of applause from President Biden, who tweeted, "Good on you, Big Bird. Getting vaccinated is the best way to keep your whole neighborhood safe."
That was not the only person who was triggered by it. This Robbie Starbuck tweeted about the Big Bird. He quote tweeted it 5 days later. Big Bird post photo from his hospital bed. "Hi, kids. I had a little heart attack, but it's very rare. I do it all over again and can't wait to get my booster." Shafindigda announcer. "Sorry, kids. He's having a reaction. Totally not related to the shot and needs rest." And can you scroll down? 7 days later, big blood clot. Bird is served, and it's a gif of a turkey.
First of all, his whole thing about Kermit.
Yeah, what the hell? Why is he pretending to not remember his name?
Yeah, there's that. Also, that movie was that was like a really good movie. That 2011 Muppets remake.
I didn't see it.
It's Tex Richmond, I think, right? Is the name of the character. It's played by Chris Cooper, who plays he plays this like diabolical villain who's convinced there's oil underneath the Muppets studio. So he like does anything that he can to break up the Muppets and
get possession. Really cute.
And it's all it is a plot device designed to have a bad guy try to move the Muppets out, right, and bring it and threaten the Muppets. There's no ideology about capitalism, or barely even anything about greed in that movie. It's literally just an excuse to create a whole bunch of bits. If you're triggered by that, you're somebody who probably shouldn't be anywhere near like a loaded weapon, would think, you know.
Yeah, seriously, get a grip.
You need a little bit thicker skin than that.
You need more feathers.
Right.
Wendy Rogers, who's a state senator in, I believe, in Texas. No, sorry, Arizona state senator. She tweeted in response, "Big Bird is a communist."
The Republicans are so frustrating to me because they just don't know how to argue points. A communist, really? Like, I don't know. Like, I could vaguely see the argument that it's not necessary to drag kids into the vaccine debate.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right? Like, the counter argument to that is pretty obvious, which is that kids are going to be vaccinated. So it given that, it might be helpful for them to have a trusted figure like Big Bird talking about it, making them feel like it's not so scary,
right?
Like, if this is going to happen for a lot of people, it's not like convincing you to go get it. It's like,
It's not like the kid is going to be like, "Oh, well, I've seen enough. Big Bird's on board."
Yeah. I'm going to go run and get myself an experimental vaccine or whatever. You know what I mean? That's not what's happening here.
They don't want it normalized. They don't want this violate. They're taking away our freedoms. They don't want that to be normalized.
I can theoretically see the argument. Like, you don't want to bring anything political into a kid's show. Like, you know, especially for somebody that young. But then you got to go to, if you're going to say that he's a communist, like, really? Like, that's just crazy. God.
Well, yeah. Maybe he wants to redistribute the vaccine.
And is OAN, is that like, so the Fox hosts all have the same kind of hair and physique and everything, but
that's these Newsmax.
They're like Fox people, but like more so, right? Like they're
like more unctuous. Is that it?
Or thicker, you know, the fatter head, you know, I don't know.
They're less waspy.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
He's the author of The Swamp, Washington's Murky Pool of Corruption and Cronyism, and How Trump Can Drain It.
Inspirational. So isn't that weird? You know, we got We have a little bit of a theme, I guess, this week. Here's an AP story. No toilet for returning SpaceX crew stuck using diapers. And then there's a picture of them all holding peppers in zero gravity. And here's the story. Cape Canaveral, Florida.
They look like they're wearing burglar pants.
Yeah.
Was that burglar? Hamburger?
Hamburglar?
Yeah.
The astronauts who will depart the International Space Station on Sunday will be stuck using diapers on the way home because of their capsule's broken toilet. NASA astronaut Megan MacArthur described the situation Friday as suboptimal but manageable. She and three crewmates will spend 20 hours in their SpaceX capsule from the time the hatches are closed until Monday morning's planned splashdown.
Hatches are closed. Splashdown?
The splashdown is interesting, right? It could be like a kerplunk down or something
like
that.
Exactly, right? Yeah, exactly.
Space flight is full of lots of little challenges, she said during a news conference from orbit. This is just one more that we'll encounter and take care of in our mission, so we're not too worried about it. After a series of meetings Friday, mission managers decided to bring MacArthur and the rest of her crew home before launching their replacements. That SpaceX launch already had been delayed by more than a week by bad weather and an undisclosed medical issue involving one of the crew. I hope that medical issue isn't
not an upset stomach,
explosive diarrhea or something. They also had to deal with a toilet leak. This is because it goes further down the story, pulling up panels in their SpaceX capsule and discovering pools of urine. The problem was first noted during SpaceX's private flight in September when a tube came unglued and spilled urine beneath the floorboards. Blah, blah, blah. On the culinary side, the astronauts grew the first chili peppers in space. A nice moral boost. I think what they mean is a nice morale boost.
Morale boost, but they wrote moral. That's interesting.
They got the sample they were harvesting in the past week, adding pieces of the green and red peppers to tacos. Interesting.
Mm. What Matt was eating before the
show. Yeah, a little fourth wall stuff I was eating in taco just before the show. A little disappointing that the story itself doesn't give us more details about the diapers, but
and this is where you're reading the Washington Post?
AP,
yeah, that's disappointing. We need the New York Post to cover this so that we have some like good poop puns.
First of all, they never went there with the whole tacos,
right?
They could have made some kind of a joke, like a transition.
They're scared. They're cowards.
Perhaps an unintended consequence of the of their successful growing of chili peppers was that they ended up having to poop their drawers full of tacos.
How long have they had toilets in space on spaceships? Because I feel like aren't astronaut diapers a thing?
Well, depends on what kind of flight we're talking about. There was a famous incident when Alan Shepard, who was the first American in space, he actually had to pee in his suit, if I remember correctly.
Hmm. Did it go up?
No, he was only supposed to be in space for like 5 minutes, but they kept him on the launch pad forever.
I really have to pee, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
But does the pee because of no gravity?
They made it
what happens
scene
to the pee?
And the right stuff. You always have to go into an enclosed thing, so I don't know how it works, but
let's just say you're peeing in your suit, which is you're saying what happened, right?
Yeah,
like what happens when there's no gravity?
Well, obviously the suit would have to be enclosed, I'm assuming,
right?
Yeah,
but let's say I'm just curious I guess that's true, so that wouldn't, but what would happen if you somehow took your suit off and pooped or peed?
It would fly all around the it would helicopter around the capsule.
Yeah.
Could be a way to pass the time, I guess.
I guess, pass the gas.
Yeah.
Pass the poop, pass the time.
Yeah. All right, what do we have for Isn't That Terrible?
So for Isn't That Terrible, this one Wilson notified me too. And I got to say, I'm getting soft in my old age, I think, because this even made me a bit squeamish.
Really?
Let's go to the article.
It's not like you're not squeamish.
I'm usually can really power through these penis stories.
Oh God!
Yeah.
Oh no, it made you squeamish. Oh,
yeah.
No. Okay. All right.
It's true. I'm squeamish about certain things. In fact, one of the things that I'm squeamish about is publicly pooping, which Matt apparently has a fantasy about, and this maybe this actually justifies your position. Here, you'll see why. Okay, let's see. I'm sorry. I don't want to kink shame you or suggest you have a fantasy about it when you don't.
No, but it's more like I understand it.
You understand the urge to take a crap in a public ice school or in a supermarket.
In a freezer. Yeah. Like
in a freezer. Yeah. Yeah. Man's. Okay. Here we go. Reading from the New York Post. And this is shout out to Sam Z 463601774 on Twitter. Make sure that Useful Idiots gives him a follow. Man's penis rots after being bitten by snake while sitting on toilet in South Africa. So actually, this is a good argument against you for using non-toilet. So Matt, maybe this goes in your, this is a boon for your position. A Dutch man had to undergo reconstructive surgery on his penis after a cobra bit his manhood during a safari trip to South Africa, causing it to rot. See, even I think the story is so bad that, like, I don't want to oversell it, but even the New York Post isn't using any of turns of phrase that they usually do. Like, not a single one so far. Mm. Well, let's see. The 47-year-old victim suffered scrotal necrosis after the cold-blooded serpent, which was lurking in the toilet bowl, attacked, according to urology case reports. In what the medical journal described as the first case of snouted cobra envenomation of the genitals, the unidentified man had to wait 3 hours before he was flown by helicopter to the nearest trauma center some 220 miles away. His penis and scrotum were noted to be swollen, deep purple in color, and painful on hospital admission. Scrotal necrosis was diagnosed and he received multiple doses of a nonspecific snake venom anti-serum and broad-spectrum antibiotics, according to the medical report. So he reported vomiting and a burning sensation as well as pain that shot up from his groin into the abdomen and upper chest, though he developed no neurological symptoms during the ordeal. He required hemodialysis due to acute kidney injury before undergoing reconstructive surgery. And then they go through the surgery, which sounds really painful. But the good news is the defect in the penile shaft was treated by a superficial debridement and a vacuum-assisted closure pump. After 9 days, the patient was repatriated to the Netherlands, where a plastic surgeon performed a penile shaft debridement with extensive resection of dead tissue extending onto the corpus spongiosum to the fold of the prepudium. A graft from the groin was then placed over the penis, and he has made a full recovery. Thank God. It could have been a lot worse.
How full could it be if they had to resect dead tissue and replace it with some other kind of tissue?
Groin tissue.
Right, but you know, that's like Frankenpenis.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah. I mean, it could have killed him, and he also could have, so he could have died and he could have lost his penis instead of just having a, I don't know, I hope the guy doesn't have a Frankenpenis, but you get what I'm saying? That story is so bad that I don't see a single pun from the New York Post.
Do you think they were scared away because it was so horrible that?
I don't know. What do you think? Should we write a letter to the editor complaining? If we can't rely on them for penis puns, what can we rely on in this world?
I think, you know, if you're putting yourself in the shoes of the average male reader, this story might cross the line into the territory that you don't want to joke about.
Yeah, like, I guess so. Although, yeah, like, we should, you know,
I sat on a toilet and got bit by, had a cobra bite my penis, right. And then it turned black and I had to be flown to the Netherlands and have dead tissue resected.
That's really not a laugher.
right.
Shaft you not.
We'll work on it.
Yeah, we'll workshop it. But there is beautiful penis news. So Wilson did deliver the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, that's the bad and the ugly. And the good news is that the rare penis plant blooms for the first. See, when God rots a penis, he blooms another one. Rare penis plant blooms for the first time in 25 years. Experts believe that this is only the third time the aptly named Amorphophallus discus sylvi has bloomed in Europe. So let's take a look at that that photo. So there you see a woman standing on a ladder to take a photo of this thing.
That doesn't look like a penis to me.
Aaron, welcome. Do you have anything to say about the penis plant?
Not yet. No.
Not yet. He's holding his tongue.
Oh, yeah.
He's biting his tongue.
So decelerating to something a little less serious, welcome Aaron Mate of the Gray Zone. friend of show. We've had you on many times before. So
of the pushback of the gray zone.
Right. Of the pushback of the gray zone. We wanted to have you on today to talk about, obviously, there was big news last week in the Russiagate thing. There's been a conspicuous, I would say, vacuum of attention in sort of mainstream media. Although there were a few things. We want to ask you about that, too. But we figured this would be a good place to get into what is and is not in the indictment of Igor Danchenko. So, Aaron, you've obviously covered a lot of Russiagate stories from the beginning. What is this indictment really all about, and why is it important?
Well, it's just new evidence that the Steele dossier was a fraud. And what's funny to me is, like, it didn't seem possible before that the Steele thing could get more embarrassing. You have this, just the document itself is a joke. I mean, it's so stupid. If I was reading it today going back, and it's just like, it's this like series of, it sounds like it's written by a crazy person, this like series of like claims of a high level Trump Russia conspiracy blackmail scheme. But what's amazing, on top of what a farce it is on its own, the fact this document could even be produced, then you have the fact that it was used by the FBI for surveillance warrant applications to spy on Trump campaign volunteer Carter Page, and also used for investigative leads. Like, they took this document and they chased down every part of it that they could. They had a spreadsheet trying to keep track of like what they could corroborate and what they couldn't. Of course, the only things that they could corroborate were stuff that was already public by the time Steele wrote it, because, you know, as was obvious for a long time, and I pointed this out a while ago.
And actually, that's interesting, because you're one of the only people who did point this out.
So obvious. The way Steele was treated in the media, right? Like, the way like Rachel Maddow would report it, she'd be like, well, and the fact is, if you look at the Steele dossier, a lot of what he reported did come out to be publicly confirmed. And the whole point is, that's because Steele dossier and his sources, Steele and his sources, were reading in the news media stuff that came out and then writing about a similar claim in their dossier. So, for example, like, Steele doesn't mention anything about Russia stealing Democratic Party emails until Russia gets accused publicly of stealing Democratic Party emails. And Steele writes that there's a quid pro quo now between Trump and Russia, centered on the RNC changing a platform language about Ukraine. And Steele doesn't write that until that came out in a column in the Washington Post by Josh Rogan. And Rogan, of course, got the story totally wrong. It was really this meaningless platform change, but that was blown up in the media at the time, because that's when the Trump-Russia thing was getting going. And it's only after that does Steele somehow discover. And what also, so that's what's in the Steele dossier. And then what's not in the Steele dossier are any of these central characters who later became key Trump-Russia figures, because they weren't publicly reported by the time Steele was writing it. So, like, the person who kicked off the whole Trump-Russia investigation, supposedly, George Papadopoulos, he's not in the Steele dossier. Neither is the Trump Tower meeting between Don Jr. and some Russians. All these things had happened by the time Steele was writing his reports, but the problem is they weren't in the newspapers yet. So it was just so obvious from that alone. I mean, put aside how ridiculous all the dumb claims were, like the P-tape, blackmail, Michael Cohen meeting with Russian hackers in Prague. I mean, you can go on and on. It was just obvious what a joke this was. So, you know, first it came out that after a year basically of lying about it, that the Clinton campaign was funding it, okay, which was hugely embarrassing for everyone who had taken the dossier seriously.
It's amazing that it took that long, by the way.
It is amazing. It is amazing. And it only came out because basically House Republicans, like the only people in government willing to apply some scrutiny to the intelligence community, were people on the House Intelligence Committee, Kash Patel, Devin Nunes. And they discovered that they got the bank records. So they forced Perkins Coie, the Clinton campaign law firm, to admit it. And then it came out, you know, that like we got declassified the surveillance warrants on Carter Page, where the FBI was going to a FISA court four times to get surveillance warrants on this low-level Trump campaign volunteer Carter Page. And their main source for in trying to convince the court to let them spy on Carter Page was the Steele dossier, which they called credible. And they, of course, concealed from the FISA court that the Clinton campaign was funding the Steele dossier. So basically, they were looking to spy on a member of the Trump team based on a document that was funded by Trump's opponents. They concealed that. And they also concealed what we later found out, which is that the primary subsource, this guy who you mentioned, Igor Danchenko, I'm sorry, I'm already botching the correct pronunciation.
Yeah, it's probably Danchenko. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm going to just go with the American version because I apologize. But they also concealed that, early on in January 2017, right at the beginning of relatively the whole Trump Russia thing, the investigation had only been opened up a few months earlier on July 31st, 2016. So January 2017, Danchenko, the Steele dossier's main source, told the FBI that it was all bullshit, that like basically corroboration was quote zero. That's in the headline of one of your great pieces, Matt. And that basically all the stuff he came up with was like the result of like drunken chatter with friends. So the FBI knew that, but they still went back to the FISA court and vouched for Steele and got surveillance warrants based on Steele. And anonymous intelligence officials still leaked to the media this picture. They were telling them, we're looking into it and his claims are checking out. Like a lot of it is bearing out. That was leaked to CNN and to the New Yorker very early on in 2017, after they knew that there was nothing to the Steele dossier. So there have been a series of embarrassments. And finally, now we get this indictment of Danchenko, and we learn from it that not only was Danchenko admitting privately that there was no corroboration for what he was saying, but that we learn more about his supposed subsource, the people he spoke to, and they're not Russian. One of them is a guy named Charles Dolan, who's a public relations executive, who is a deep Clinton world figure. He chaired Bill Clinton's presidential campaign in Virginia twice. Bill Clinton appointed him to a State Department board. He was a volunteer and advisor to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaigns in 2008 and 2016. And basically, while Steele was making the world think that he had access to high-level Kremlin sources for claims like the P-tape, we learned from the indictment that the P-tape thing probably comes from Charles Dolan. And Charles Dolan does not appear to be doing this wittingly. He doesn't appear to be fabricating the P-tape thing and giving that to Danchenko, who then gives it to Steele. What happened was Danchenko and Steele, who knew each other and worked together, were talking, and Dolan happened to be in Moscow in June 2016, and he got a tour of the Moscow Ritz-Carlton, and one staffer told him that Trump had stayed there. And not long after that, he speaks to Danchenko, and not long after that, Danchenko speaks to Steele, and then Steele writes his first report that Trump had stayed in the Ritz-Carlton and Russians had made a P-tape of him and using that as blackmail. So basically what it looks like is that Danchenko and Steele took Dolan's benign information about Trump staying in the presidential suite of the Ritz-Carlton and turned that into the P-tape. And we also learned that Danchenko spoke to another guy named Sergei Milian, who's also not Russian. He's from Belarus, but he was the head of the Russian American Chamber of Commerce. And Danchenko had claimed that Milian told him some of the information that went into some of the Steele dossier's key claims, that there was a big Trump-Russia conspiracy. It turns out that Danchenko and Milian never even spoke,
Right.
So it just gets a whole lot more hilarious.
Yeah, there's an amazing section in the indictment where, so the whole thing about Milian is confusing, but the idea is that Danchenko, or however we're pronouncing it, allegedly told Steele that Milian was his source for a lot of this stuff. The indictment lays out that what actually happened was that Danchenko was trying to get an interview with Milian, but never answered. Supposedly he set up a meeting with him in New York, but we find out that what he actually did is that he went to New York with his family and then went to the Bronx Zoo, among other things. So there's never any contact with Milian. I guess the question is, do we know whether the P-tape, was that an invention of Danchenko, or is that Steele? Is there anything about this that clears that up at all?
What Danchenko said is that he told Steele about the P-tape, but he said it was rumor and speculation. Mm-hmm. And that, so it looks like basically it did come from Danchenko, but he's trying to say that Steele, did not independently corroborate it, surprise, surprise. And that, he stressed to Steele that it was rumor and speculation, that it wasn't incredible. I mean, look, like regardless, I mean, whether Danchenko invented it or Steele or both, it's just Steele is a clown.
Right.
He presented to the world that he had access to all these high level Kremlin sources, when really it was this guy, Igor Danchenko, who doesn't have access to really to the Kremlin. He has much, much better access to the Beltway because he lives in D.C. He worked for a long time at the Brookings Institute, a mainstream liberal think tank, also with deep ties to Clinton. And one of his key sources is a Clinton world figure, which raises just many, many ironies. I mean, and again, I don't think Dolan, it doesn't look as if Dolan knew that he was being part of a Clinton-funded, disinformation operation. But just the fact that one of the key sources that ends up providing information that goes into it comes from the Clinton world. And another irony there, that for all hyperventilating for 4 years about these possible Trump-Russia connections, I mean, does Russia hold financial leverage over Trump and what have you? This Dolan figure is another example that the Clinton world has far deeper ties to Russia than anything that they could find out about Trump, because Dolan worked for the Russian government and did PR for them and had contact with a number of senior Russian officials. And that also helped inspire, I guess, another key dossier claim, which is that they said that there was some Russian embassy official in Washington who was recalled and he went back to Washington, right? And the picture we got—
Oleg Kalugin, yep.
Yeah, yeah. And what we were told in the media was that, what Steele said was that he was recalled because Moscow feared that his role in the Russian interference operation would get exposed, right? And there's so many funny clips of this, like McClatchy, which really humiliated itself with Russiagate. They did such great work during the Iraq War, but on Russiagate, McClatchy humiliated itself. They claimed to have basically corroboration of Michael Cohen going to Prague because of some cell phone signals pinging, Michael Cohen's cell phone gets pinging in Prague or near Prague or something. Anyway, but so McClatchy did a story about this, and Rachel Maddow, of course, and Matt, you pointed this out in your story,
She dragged it all out. She put it.
Yeah, let's take a look at your piece. I put it in the chat, Wilson.
I mean, maybe we should watch some of that segment because it's so funny.
Yeah, we should.
Because she spends like 6 minutes or something on just this one claim about this diplomat. And basically, the Steele claim, the Steele Maddow claim, is that this diplomat was recalled from Washington because the Kremlin feared that his role in the Russian interference operation would get exposed. And Maddow was like, well, he was recalled. That's true. It did happen. And that she suggests that that's proof that Steele is right. Now we learn from the indictment what actually happened, which is that basically Dolan and this guy were in touch because Dolan was deeply tied with Russia. And so Dolan was told months in advance by both this embassy official and by another embassy official in the Russian embassy in Washington that he was going to be recalled. And he passed that to Danchenko. And that then led to Steele and Danchenko coming up with this fiction that he was like some operative for the Russian interference operation. And that it was based on a friendship between Dolan and this Russian diplomat because this guy works heavily for, because Dolan is very involved with Russia. He worked for Russia. And I don't think there's anything wrong with working for Russia, knowing Russians, talking to Russians. But the premise of this whole Russiagate thing for 4 years is that it's somehow nefarious to speak to Russians. And that's why when they couldn't uncover a Trump-Russia conspiracy, the talking point shifted to the Mueller investigation uncovered Trump contacts with Russians. That's literally what Marshall Cohen of CNN wrote recently, that he said that the Mueller report found Trump associates contacting with Russians. Like, yeah, people speak to people with Russian passports, and it's only a nefarious thing if you believe there's this underlying conspiracy behind it. And of course, there's no evidence for that, as this latest indictment only underscores.
So that's interesting. So this was actually one of Steele's few pieces of original reporting, was the business about Kalugin being dismissed, but it came from this Clinton world figure, Dolan.
Matt and Aaron, when you guys see like a new document coming out, what's the sensation? and how many times do you read them?
Matt, go ahead. That's a good question though.
Is it like drool or
just... Well, just to stop on this for a second, like it's interesting because I think we're like about 6 months past the point where serious journalists will still try to argue with you that there's something there. Like I haven't had anybody like arguing with me via email about this stuff for a while now. So most of this is all for me. A lot of it is just for the humor value at this point. But I definitely feel like there is a little bit of a Christmas morning kind of a feel to these indictments, because you're finding out stuff that we just couldn't learn. Like, we tried for years to find out what the deal with this stuff was. I can't tell you how many times I asked, like, well, how do they know this or that? And now we're getting some answers, theoretically, because indictments aren't proof necessarily, but there's some of this stuff is confirmed. I don't know. Aaron, how do you feel about it?
I mean, I love it. It is like a kid on Christmas morning for me, because look, this was I spent a lot of time on this story, and there was a time when there were so many people vested in making me feel like, like I was like colossally on the wrong side. This was going to end my career. And that results from probably spending too much time paying attention to Twitter, but you know, the accumulation of that for so long, and just the way the media was so vested in this, it was a lonely time. It was. But I also knew that eventually all this stuff would come out, because it was just so ridiculous.
Did you?
I did, of course, because it was so obvious from the way the Mueller team wrote their indictments and the way, you know, news accounts went, where at the bottom they would bury the acknowledgments that there's no evidence for all the innuendo. I knew it would come. And so it's just hilarious. And like in this Durham indictment, there's funny things. Like I mentioned before, that I've been saying for a long time that it was obvious that Steele and his sources were just good at reading the newspaper and coming up with, you know, claims based on some approximate resemblance to what was in the news, right? And that's exactly what Durham says about Dolan, where Dolan told Durham that, yeah, I just read something in the news about Manafort being dismissed, and then I fabricated something based on that. So, you know, but it's not surprising, because this thing is ridiculous. And the only worry I have is that we're not going to get the full truth, because I think there's just so much more to learn. You know, as you guys know, I challenge the very premise of this thing, which is that Russia stole the emails. If I had to bet, I just don't think that's true based on all the evidence that's come out. And I wonder if Durham is going to go there. I hope he does, because there's just so much more to learn.
Right. Did you ever have a moment where you thought, like, maybe I'm losing my mind? Is that possible?
Well, you know what's funny? There was one time when I slipped when the Don Jr. thing came out. Don Jr. Mm-hmm. And like where he said, "If this is what you say it is, I love it."
Mm-hmm. What is it? Can you explain what this is?
So you know, this is probably June of 2017. Pretty sure it was June of 2017 that it came out that Don Jr. had written to Rob Goldstone, a music publicist, who was working for some Russians who Trump knew, including like a pop star and an oligarch, that basically Goldstone had written to Don Jr. saying, there are some Russians who have some information on behalf of the Russian government that would be helpful concerning Hillary Clinton's dealings with Russia, that would be helpful to you and your campaign. And the media response to that was like, this is the smoking gun, this is it. And before I read the full email chain, I just kind of read a news account, and I was like, oh man, like, what if this really is it? You know, and like, I did get a little bit shook there, like for a second. But then I read the thing and I was like, oh, this is classic Russiagate. It was obvious that, you know, that that whole thing was basically a music publicist. This guy, Rob Goldstone, was making stuff up to try to get Don Jr.'s interest. And Don Jr. said, if this is what you say it is, I love it. And of course, what happened was they had that meeting and nothing came of it, as the Mueller report even notes. And in fact, another irony is that those Russians who went to that meeting at Trump Tower with Don Jr. Were working, or the key Russian, this lawyer named Natalia Vetsanotskaya, she was working with Fusion GPS, the firm behind the Steele dossier. So, you know, that was the one moment where I was for a second scared.
Matt, you said you had one recently?
No. There were a couple of times in the first year or so where it wasn't anything specific like that. Although the when that one came out, I definitely hesitated for a few minutes because the way the email was worded was basically like, would you like to accept the state-sponsored aid of the Russian government to help you and, you know, defeat Hillary Clinton? It was the way it was written in the news was pretty bad. But I, more than that, I had like generalized moments of my entire like mental process must be corrupted, because everything that I'm reading tells me that this is basically bullshit. And if I'm wrong about that, then it has to be like a pretty serious disease. Like this isn't something
that's
going
to reach out to Aaron or Glenn or something.
I think we've all kind of talked about this, like, you know, during that time, we were all talking to each other, and I'm sure this came up once or twice, but, I did have the thought that, if I'm wrong about this, then it's not going to be something that, you know, you can give me a couple of lorazepams and we'll fix. Like, it's probably serious, but
it's hard when everyone buys into it, including friends, including colleagues. A lot of my former colleagues bought into it, you know, and it's awkward. It makes it really awkward, but and the problem is most people don't have the time to read all these long documents and all this stuff, you know, so I get why some people fell for it, because it takes a bit of time, but it's obvious now that this thing was a scam.
Anyway, let's look at this Rachel thing.
The videotape.
Just from a journalism point, this is another question. Is this more damning to the people who are being talked about in the indictment, or is it more damning to the media? Because like episodes like this end up looking so bad, in my opinion. But let's take a look, let's watch it first, and then we'll talk about that.
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com. That was great.
It was. Aaron's great. Katie, does it make you uncomfortable, like, when we geek out about this stuff?
Not uncomfortable, no.
I think Aaron and I are probably the two sickest.
Yeah, disease. I think you're the most. Yeah.
Right.
I get it though.
Like, not even Glenn is.
No.
Is
as, not at all. Not even close.
No, he's got other interests in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's on Twitter for other things.
Right. Exactly. No, but it's interesting stuff, and I think the whole issue with Bernie is, I think that's going to come up again, right? Like this question of like why couldn't they reach a whole bunch of voters that were there for the taking? That's a question that I think we're going to have to revisit. Mm-hmm. Like I think this is kind of this Russiagate thing was kind of a lesson in a lost opportunity for that. So. Might be something we could talk about again at some other time.
Yeah.
But all right, cool. Anything else?
No, that's it. Rate, review on iTunes, subscribe, come to our Monday mornings show, which is a live YouTube show at 10 a.m. on Mondays, where we go over the Sunday morning shows. Subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss those. youtube.com/usefulidiots. Subscribe on Substack to our Useful Idiots, our very own Useful Idiots.
All those things.
All those things.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for hanging in with us.
Thanks.
And we'll see you again next week.
See you next week.
All right, take care.
Hello. Thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday Morning Show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.